Four Midwest Guys presents
The Night's Watch, a Game of Thrones podcast.
Night gathers, and now my watch begins. I am the sword in the darkness. I am the watcher on the walls. I am the shield that guards the realm of men.
We watch, we listen, and we remember.
The past is already written, the ink is dry.
I thought he was the man to lead us through the long night. And I was wrong.
I'll show them what Lannisters are. What we do to our enemies. How do you know this?
That's what I do. I drink, and I know things.
I believe men of talent have a part to play in the war to come.
I will never set them right.
You could help another client by steps and take that seat.
I'm not going to stop the wheel. I'm going to break the wheel.
They have no idea what's going to happen.
The wheel of war is between the living and the dead. And make no mistake, the dead are coming.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Four Midwest Guys Presents The Night's Watch, a Game of Thrones podcast. Today we'll be reviewing Season 6, Episode 5, The Door. With me today is Stephanie.
Hello, hello.
Her husband, Johnny Z. It'll be alright, John. It'll be alright. And my brother Aaron's back.
Hey, how's it going, man?
How's it going, dude? Alright, guys, so... another heartbreaking episode. We'll
heartbreaking, that. Or this, just
this,
like
this
rip
was
it
the
out
heartbreaking
of your
episode.
Chest.
There's so. Not been an episode that has had this deep.
Rip it,
connection.
It out of your chest.
Yeah,
and squeeze
it had
right
a lot
of
setup
you.
For this one.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe we'll get to it at the end, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just a cold-hearted ass. But
if
I,
you
I
didn't feel anything, then yes.
Yeah.
Right,
so.
Oh my god.
We'll get to that. We'll get to you later then.
Yep. All right.
Therapy.
Therapy by us, like, chucking everything inside at you. You're tucked away in the corner. We have you.
Go away. All right. So let's just get started. It opens with the scene of Sansa. She's sewing something. We're not sure what quite yet, but she's sewing some sort of leather together.
I know.
Sitting at, yeah. And, I'm sorry, baby. Sorry, couldn't help myself. All right, so, she's sewing the leather together, and she gets a letter with what appears to be Littlefinger's seal on it. Opens it, she looks disgusted, she's like, where is Mole? I think it was in Mole City, or something.
Mole City.
Or something like that. Anyway.
The City of Moles.
The City of Moles.
No one escapes this.
How far is it to the City of Moles?
No one escapes the City of the Moles. Oh, dang.
Okay.
All right.
Simpsons reference. Mm-hmm. I know my wife doesn't get it.
No.
Aaron got it.
It's just a weird reference.
Moving on.
You didn't even go for, like, Morocco Mole or anything?
Okay, so it's not a review about Mole City, guys. It's just a name.
A Mole City retrospective.
So, good God, we've already gone off track and we're one line into the episode.
Welcome to our show.
All right. So.
At least we made it past the introduction.
We have a very, like, you know, Adderall, like, soaked audience that enjoys our show.
So, eventually, Sansa goes and meets Littlefinger in an abandoned warehouse or some sort of shack.
It's like a barn.
Abandoned warehouse? What?
Abandoned warehouse.
I don't know. Medieval abandoned warehouse.
Okay.
So, stable, whatever.
Yeah, there we go. We'll go with that.
It's like a shack that the wildlings took over. At one point, probably.
It kind of looked that way. It looked like it'd been attacked and burned out. Maybe it's the city the wildlings attacked. I'm not sure. I'd have to go back and reference that.
It's the place that houses Ramsay Bolton's sense of maturity.
Maybe.
Sense of morality.
Anyway, Sansa versus Littlefinger. Basically, Littlefinger, she just says... Well, really, Sansa just kind of comes out and lets him have it. She's like... Did you know about Ramsay? She goes right after him.
There's that punches. Little statement. If you knew, then you're an enemy to me. If you didn't, you're an idiot, sort of thing.
Exactly.
Because the entire time, Brienne's in the back, just holding the sword.
I mean, it completely undercuts the way Littlefinger likes to start a conversation. Like from the last episode,
oh yeah,
we
she
see
forced
him,
the conversation.
Oh yeah, I mean, we see him like direct the conversation the way he wants it to go. He tried to start that up, but she just cut him off.
Sure she did. And she goes further. She goes, would you like to know what she did to us on our wedding night?
And oh, she's like, no, guess. Go ahead, I'll wait.
Yeah, really.
Well, what all do you think he did?
I mean, Sansa is like...
just over and over again. And I almost want to say... he looks shocked by what she's become.
Yeah, I mean, these last couple episodes, she is not shying away from, like, the horrors.
She's turning around into, like, you know, from this, oh, I want to marry Joffrey, to, I'm going to kick your ass.
No, it's more like, oh, I'm so afraid of what to do in my wedding night, versus, yeah, you want to know what went where?
Yeah, exactly. And she, but, I mean, she just keeps going before he even has a word to say. She's like, what do you think he did? What do you think he did to me? And he's like, literally, he's like, he beat you?
Come at me, come at me, bro.
It's the most general sort of statements he could have. And he's...
It's almost like a court scene, like an interrogation going on.
Yeah, he was not aware he was inviting her to his own interrogation, but that's how it went.
Yeah. My favorite line that she delivers from that scene, and it's the most haunting, and it's also like, you know, just seals in, like, how Sansa becomes at the end of it. She says, I can still feel it. And I don't mean in my heart. I mean, as I stand here, I still feel it in me.
Yeah, it's definitely the most visceral statement.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how she kind of closes it out. But, I mean, even during that, before that, he's like, he beat you? Yes, he enjoyed that. What else do you think he did? I mean, just...
Yeah, she's like, yeah, like, yeah, you're, that was it. That's the top of the iceberg. Keep going.
Keep going.
Come at me, bro. Come at me. He's like, no. I got this.
And he keeps going, did he cut you?
She's like, oh, you're a normal human. You don't think the way he thinks.
Mm-hmm. But let's face it, in typical Baelish manner, eventually he starts to turn, or at least he tries to turn it on.
I think he does kind of succeed a little bit towards the end of, at least in sowing a bit of doubt into her relationship with John by the end of it.
At the very end, yes. But even before that, where he's like, well, what would you prefer? Would you like me to die? And she's...
Really? I thought that was kind of the most, like, pathetic moment for him.
Not
like,
really, because he's using that.
That seems like an out.
Yeah, well, because...
Like, that felt like...
She threatened him.
She's like, I'll have Brienne cut you down.
You can't even protect yourself against Brienne. Yeah.
Should I have her
so
cut
that was,
you down?
Honestly, that was almost his way of saying, go ahead, kill me. I win if you do.
Yeah, he's like, well, I'll do whatever you like. Would you like me to die? I will die.
But I think there's a part of him that does, I mean, like, throughout that whole scene, there is a part of him that did, like, resent the fact that the Sansa he dropped off was not the same woman that's standing before him.
Yeah. And they go into the whole army thing. He says, I have an army, you know, your brother. And he goes, your brother has... My brother has an army. No, no, your half brother has an army.
Yeah,
and that's the there's the key.
That's the end scene. Like, yeah, where
that's where the doubt
is. Before that, he brings up the moment with her uncle reforming like the Tully army. Her uncle Blackfish was it?
Yes, Blackfish.
Who we thought has been missing for this whole time. So apparently, one of the missing people has been found.
Right. So a little bit of good news for her or something. Mm. Again, the typical Baelish, giving them a little bit of hope or giving them something for them to grasp to so he can start manipulating. And the seal, obviously, he's going to be on one side and Jon Snow's going to be on the other when it comes to Sansa. He's going to be pulling at her going forward, I think.
Yeah, so. It definitely seems like setting up for further manipulation down the road.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay, so on to the next scene. A girl gets a second chance. Welcome back to Braavos. Arya is still getting, even though after she kicked her butt after being blind, I think her name is Waif, the other girl in training.
She has no name.
Yeah, the other
girl. She may have no name.
The other girl with no name is kicking her ass. Now, whether Waif was holding back before when she was blind, I don't know. But something has changed because she's literally getting her ass kicked.
Oh, she has hated Arya from day one.
Oh, yeah. She's never liked her. Like, and you can even tell like the last couple episodes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you see, like, the resentment in her facial expression. Yeah. I love there's one part where she drops the stick down right before she just turns, but she doesn't really turn her head. It's just, like, a crooked, full body sort of thing back at her. Like, oh, you want to go again. This is going to be fun.
Well, I'm waiting for the Lawrence Fishburne, you know, hand wave thing.
Yeah.
Classic kung fu pose.
Yeah.
But eventually... the faceless man, a.k.a. Jesus, comes and rescues her.
Ewan McGregor?
Basically, after telling her origin story to the Faceless Man, the founders of the Free City, he's basically kind of given her history of.
Yeah, there's a really funny bit in there where she asks, like, "Well, who was he?" And he's like, "He was no one."
Yeah, like, exactly.
It's like when you're trying to give a history, but you're not like giving any of the actual details the way we would normally say it.
But we do kind of learn that they sell their abilities, essentially their tasks, their assassin skills are indeed assassins because they are guns for hire.
Yeah. So for as cool as the faceless people are, they're basically controlled by the loom of fate from Wanted.
Possibly. He says that a price is paid. We don't know what that price is yet. That could be anything.
Yeah, a price has been paid for a life. Yeah. Why is one life more important than the other?
Right, and it's all about, he said, in the history, he said that they were provided services, and almost like a goods trade of goods.
It's kind of like they're mercenaries, then?
Kind of, a mercenary assassin kind of thing. Yeah. So
assassin, hitmen for hire.
It'll be interesting to see.
It also kind of goes with the religion a little bit. They believe in worshipping the god of death, and they bring more people to the god of death.
Yeah, the god of many faces.
Yeah.
So anyway, the faceless man says, the girl has gotten a second chance. She will not give the third. He gives her the vial of
five poison. Is right out.
Mm. Poison.
And basically tells her that she has to kill an actress, essentially.
Please be Kristen Stewart.
And then he says, either way, he says, a girl has been given a second chance, she will not be given a third. And then he threatens her, essentially says, either way, a face will be added to the wall, regardless. Mm-hmm. So basically, if she doesn't do it this time, she's going to be the face on the wall, essentially, is what he's telling her. At least that's how I took it. I don't know, what do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much what we, you know, have gathered from this point.
Yeah. Anybody else think anything different? No?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right, just wanted to check. Make sure I'm not off on my own little tangents here. Okay, so next scene, she's back as the clam. She's in her clam girl outfit that we saw from last season, I think.
Yeah, like the poverty kind of.
The poverty girl.
The matchstick girl.
Yeah. Right, matchstick
girl. Well, she's got to fit in with the crowd, so yeah.
Yeah. So she's in the crowd, and she sees this play, and it's the play of basically Robert Baratheon's death, essentially, and the war that happened afterwards, their version of it.
Yeah.
Kind of funny.
I thought it was really funny, and it's really interesting, because she's more or less watching her father get beheaded again.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, and it's reenacting, and it's further testing in that kind of mental way.
Well, and she's actually laughing all the way up until the point they bring out Ned Stark, and they make Ned Stark a bumbling fool.
Yeah, interesting just to see how the actual kingdom reinterprets, like, we've seen so far.
The entire thing, that entire scene reminded me of in the season 3 of Avatar: The Last Airbender.
That's actually what came to mind for me too.
The Fire Kingdom's reenactment of what the last of Avatar is.
Yeah, it actually is really similar.
It is incredibly similar. That would make me so happy if I found out that George Martin took inspiration from Avatar: The Last Airbender.
So Robert Baratheon is a big fat fool in the play.
Yeah.
Cersei.
Have him, like, farting to death.
Farting to death. Joffrey is a little.
He's not portrayed as the monster he really was.
Yeah, he's a whiny pissant, but he's trying to be noble, sort of thing.
Right.
And then you have, like, their interpretation of Ned Stark, who is this greedy, like, country bumpkin, and it's like, that is the weirdest thing about it.
About as far opposite from Ned Stark as you can get.
Yeah.
So we've had, like, three different versions of Ned Stark at this point. We've got the Ned Stark that we've seen from season 1, mm-hmm. and then we see the flashback where it's like, oh, how did my father defeat this great swordsman? You find out he made it up. And now we've got, like, Braavos's version of how they see him.
Yeah, the bumbling idiot. Yeah.
So Ned Stark is probably the one that wears many faces.
Probably, and then she, and then they Sansa's in the play as well, and that's, you know, where they got the younger actress or whatever.
Yeah, and that's also where they have, like, the small Tyrion.
Yeah, and then there's another midget playing Tyrion.
Yeah.
With a really big fake nose on.
Actually, I thought it was just a guy on his knees.
No,
it wasn't.
That would probably have been funnier, actually, but no. And actually probably much more offensive. But anyway.
A lot more offensive, but it's...
But yeah, it is what it is, right?
I thought that whole scene was interesting to watch because She's watching all of this be played out, like, you know, she's already seen up to the point where she's, like, you know, ran away from the castle. Mm-hmm. She saw her father, like you all said, she saw her father get beheaded.
Yep.
And she basically got split away or ripped away from her sister.
Yeah, I mean.
And she hasn't known or seen any. She doesn't even know if the rest of her family's even still alive.
Yeah, yeah, that's essentially, like, she did get a bit of a summary of everything.
She got a summary of what happened to her sister.
She got promised to Tyrion and all.
Or what was supposed, what happened? She saw that, but she hasn't seen or anything past that.
Yeah.
So she almost felt sorry for Sansa.
Mm-hmm. I think she realized that, you know, she wasn't given the life she was wanting.
But my thing is that she doesn't know if the rest of her family is still alive. She may never know.
Yeah.
But
the only way now, she's finding out is through popular media.
She did now, see the Red Wedding, though, or the aftermath of it.
Okay, well, that's, oh, true. Yeah, so, well, the rest of her family.
Right.
I know I have Jon Snow out there somewhere.
But like,
I presume anyway.
It almost feels like she was torn a little. Like, does she go look in search of the rest of her family? Or does she go with this and become a mercenary and kill, you know, try to work with and kill the other people on her list?
Well, the whole part of her training is to literally become no one, right? Is to separate herself from her past.
But there are other girls on her list, too, now. Yeah.
But with that said, does she really destroy her list that we heard for...
I don't know.
Can she?
That's the whole point, I think, of all this training. I think that's why he deliberately gave her this assignment, her master.
Okay. I think I would be a little disappointed if she did give up her hit list at this point.
So, after the play's over, she goes backstage, and once again, just when we thought we'd seen the last of flaccid wieners,
this time you have one with genital warts.
A huge, giant
close-up. Yeah, that was a really close-up, and it switched right to it.
Right to it, right in your face.
And this man's penis is huge!
And not just his dick, but his balls and his hand as well.
That was so funny, though. Oh, my God. Yeah.
It was pretty funny.
I was like,
I have another one on there. It'll go away in a couple of weeks.
But they reward us.
It goes away in 5 to 6 years.
But they reward us with some tits. You know.
And they are very nice ones, too.
Nice tits, yeah. So.
So overall, just more gratuitous nudity. So, yay nudity?
Well, you know what, and I'll say this, from being on set, like, when you have, like, those kind of, you know, changing environments, actors' shame goes right out the window, like, because they know that they have to get changed really quick and in front of everybody else, so, like, just, they don't care.
Yeah.
I'm also thinking it's medieval times, so nobody gave a shit anyway.
Well, it's also the theater, too.
Yeah.
So, Arya...
Well, I mean, go back a couple episodes, you had Dothraki effing in the street, so...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go. So Arya is scouting her prey, so to speak, kind of trying to learn more about her. Turns out that the older actress who actually plays Cersei is the one she has to kill.
Mm.
And she notices that she's not, doesn't seem to be that bad of a person. Like, she's a decent person, it seems like. Like, she's in a romantic relationship. She seems like a pretty nice, decent person.
Family, too. Like, doesn't Family. She say she has kids on the way or something?
She made the joke with the midget about him bearing her children.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But probably not the first person you would think of, not especially compared to who's on her list to kill, personally.
Yeah.
Well, and funny thing is Cersei's still on her list, too.
Right.
So, in a way, maybe.
Maybe in a way. Could be. So, she goes back to her master and basically says, well, she seems like a decent woman. And then he counters, he goes, well, death can only...
Does death come only for the
wicked?
Wicked
and leave the decent behind? Basically kind of throwing it right back in her face, essentially.
Welcome to the world of Westeros.
Where the wicked survive a little longer.
Yep. And they quite thrive as well.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, he goes on, basically says a servant doesn't ask questions. So he's basically, throwing it
slightly. Yeah, it's like, are you sure you want to serve?
Right.
Like, that's constantly... Are you positive? Are you sure?
Yeah. She has to give her past life away in order to move forward. That's basically the whole thing.
Yeah, that's my problem. I don't think she can.
I don't think she can either.
No.
But we'll see. I think she's going to do her best to fool, to try to fool him. I don't know if she's going to be able to do that.
No, it
depends on how much he trains her and how powerful she gets in his organization. We'll just, only time will tell.
Well, even at that point, you kind of run to the question: is she capable of actually leaving at any point?
You know, when she finds a whole bunch of rats that are going to go in as like suicide bombers, that's how she's going to get away.
Okay,
random wanted reference. Come on,
I know. What Never it saw was. It.
Oh, you haven't? Oh, yeah.
I've only seen the bits and pieces of it.
It's pretty good, actually.
I've heard the whole thing's pretty
like,
good.
Like, I understand it's a film about, like, assassins, and, like, it had, what was it, I can't even think of the actress's name.
Morgan Freeman delivering one of the coolest lines of a Morgan Freeman film.
Oh, nice.
So, you have to see it just for that line at the end.
Okay.
So, moving on. Next scene, Bran's first vision of the episode. Basically, it brings him to the circle. There's like a stone circle and one of those big, giant...
One of the big red trees.
Red trees, yeah. Faith trees, whatever you want to call them.
That we see
the
old Winterfell. Faith
trees, yeah, is there. And we see the...
Isn't that the ancient gods?
The children, yeah, something like that. It's the what they call them, nature's children or something like that.
I think they just refer to them as the children, but yeah. Because they're like childlike in appearance.
In appearance, anyway.
They're almost like wood nymphs.
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah.
So a bunch of... we'll get at that later.
So we find out that the children of nature, or the wood nymphs, as we like to call them, actually created... Because we see a picture of them taking a stone. There's a man tied up to a tree.
Mm.
She has some sort of stone she's looking at.
It's like
at
a stone dagger. Like dagger. A spade, you know.
Looking at it in her hand, she takes it and she pushes it right to the guy's chest into his heart.
Pretty
close up on the guy's eyes, and they turn blue.
Yeah.
A very recognizable shade of blue.
It almost looked like it almost looked like the dragon glass.
Kind of.
You know, the arrowheads that what Sam found.
It's close to it, yeah.
Yeah.
So we find out that apparently the children of nature, or I guess the children of the forest, I think it's the appropriate title. I could be wrong. And the one called Leaf stabs him. His eyes turn blue. The very first White Walker.
Wait, do they have names?
Yes. Leaf is the one of the names of the characters.
Okay, I was not aware of that.
Me neither.
Like, I did not pick up on that at all.
It's the only one of the nature girls that has a lot of lines. Is Leaf, okay. The one you hear talk the most.
That's fair. I just did not pick up on that.
When they started naming the swords, I kind of, got... It's like, all right, the person that looks like this.
Yeah. So, Bran...
her sister's name's Stem.
So, upon seeing this, seeing the blue eyes, Bran wakes up out of his vision or whatever. And he turns right to Leaf and says... You made the White Walkers. It was you. You made the White Walkers. And she goes, we needed to defend ourselves. And he's like, from who? From men. Once again, men are always at fault.
man. The most evil thing on the planet.
I didn't man
will rape
it.
Nature.
I will just nod.
You'll just nod and agree. So, yes.
And
so
you too.
But she says their trees were being destroyed. They were under attack. We had no choice.
Yeah, they create, kind of a Frankenstein monster sort of thing to defend themselves with, and it goes out of control.
Yeah,
like a golem sort of thing.
Basically, Ferngully became dark in this one.
Wow, we pulled out the Ferngully. Okay.
You know what? I'm just like a wealth of references, apparently, tonight.
No, every night, honey.
Oh, that's true.
Anyway, so my question to that is, why did they feel scared? Why did they feel threatened?
They're at war, apparently. Why
did they feel threatened against the men? What was happening during that time? Why were the trees being cut down?
They were expanding.
What's the bigger question or the bigger picture?
Why were the trees, I guess, of the old gods being attacked?
Mm-hmm.
What was going on during that time?
Well, it might not necessarily been the trees of the old gods as much as just the trees in the forest itself.
Well, because the one tree where they skimmed over had like blood tears coming out of it. What was going on?
Well, it could be
since the first season, haven't
they? Yeah. But I mean, it could be like the nature symbolism in Lord of the Rings with, Tolkien making the whole thing like a parable of the Industrial Revolution, the Industrial Era at the time, when mankind started progressing so far. Like, they started cutting down more forests. They started expanding more. I mean, hell, we are getting, like, a bunch of nations. So, yeah, I mean, that's at a core of a lot of fantasy, a lot of, you know, I think this is at core of a lot of fantasy. That's probably what's happening here. It's like, this, the world of man is starting to expand. Nature, you know, will inevitably push back.
Yeah, you see so that a bit in Ghibli films as well.
Oh, Princess Mononoke for yeah. easily.
Or it could just be Al Gore decided to write this episode. An inconvenient truth.
You know, it's more interesting than this goddamn slideshow.
Anyway.
All right, so moving on. Next scene. When you become the king of the Iron Islands, you can drown, apparently.
No, it's an initiation to drowning. Yeah.
If you drown and die, you don't become king.
I actually found this to be one of the funniest
things. It cracked me up.
Like, I was just waiting for him to, like, look. He's like, oh, he's not waking up. Well, send in the next one.
I was kind of hoping for that, too.
Like, but it was a weird sort of, like...
But it's like the end of the sequence here. We got a bunch to cover.
Yeah, it was a weird Monty Python sort of moment it could have transitioned to.
But if you think about their tagline, for lack of a better term, you know, what is dead may never die.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you drowned him, so he resurrected.
So what is dead may kind of drowned.
May come back.
Apparently, they worship the drowned god, and they're led by the drowned king. And now, if you don't come back from being drowned, the god didn't like you.
Well, I guess maybe that was nation. The nation.
Yeah.
The nation rejected their first slogan, which is, what is dead is dead.
The more I find out about these people, Theon should have just stayed on land. I mean, he stayed away from these nuts.
Yeah, they're kind of the country bumpkins of, like, Westeros.
Oh my god.
It's too much time at sea. And
you know what? This is like the West Virginia hillbillies of Westeros like, you know, stuck on islands.
Did you notice the crown going on his head? It was a bunch of, like, you know.
I actually like the crown. It's like driftwood.
Driftwood? Yeah. Was it driftwood? Okay. Well, what made me laugh was the fact that. It was a couple scenes, but what was it? When the drowned god, quote unquote, Uncle
Greyjoy. Which, by the way, if you're a god, how do you drown?
Yeah. When Uncle Greyjoy walks up, he goes, "Yeah, I killed the king," and everybody just stood there like,
okay, but before we get to all of this, before any of this, I mean, the thing when they start this whole scene out, they're trying to make a case as to who is the rightful heir to the throne. That's what I wanted to start.
Moot.
Who is the king's moot as opposed to the ent moot?
Their election process, apparently.
Right. Which is essentially a bunch of drunken hillbillies saying, "Ah, I should probably be king."
It's a caucus.
So to describe the scene to those who haven't seen it, basically they get stand in a circle.
What is wrong with you?
She declares, "Yes, what's
It'd
wrong?"
It'd be weird
you,
to be and why are you listening to this before you watch it?
Oh my god!
He's like, "I won't pay for HBO. This will be enough."
But as host, it is part of my duties. Therefore, so real quick, so they do the king's moot. She declares her candidacy. Yara declares her candidacy for being king. Theon Greyjoy steps forward. Theon says,
He didn't step forward. He was called out and said, "Why aren't you
king?" That's king. Right.
Another one of the bumpkins goes, "I didn't. Balon Greyjoy have a son. I mean, wasn't there a penis in there somewhere?
We've never had a woman for king.
Just be out there like washing them clothes or whatever.
I don't reckon I'll kill nobody.
Having them babies."
And, of course, Theon, when he's called out, gets up and, I hate to say it, delivers the best speech that he's ever delivered by supporting his sister and said, "She is Ironborn."
Yeah, like, she's been here when no one else has.
Right. It's like, she's been out in the world. She's seen it. But, of course...
So, she's this close to becoming queen, essentially.
Yeah, like, they're already chanting her name.
And then all of a sudden... Out comes Euron Greyjoy.
And of course, like any country bumpkin family,
Uncle Greyjoy.
In any good backwoods family, always worry about the uncle.
Oh, jeez.
So, basically, he comes out and says that he should be king. And I'm paraphrasing. You really should watch the episode. But essentially, he says...
Great speeches all around.
Great speeches. But he says, "I killed the king."
He was an asshole. None of us liked him.
And nobody objected, apparently, to this.
Right.
That's probably one of the funniest bits. Is like, I apologize. I didn't kill him years ago.
That's what made me laugh at the whole thing. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, the entire process is like the most comedic element to this entire show.
And Yara's like, well, then I need to kill you because you killed our father.
Yeah.
So, moving.
Okay.
So, and there's so much to talk about here, even though it's not even a long scene. So he gets picked to be king.
Well, he gets picked to be king because he's like, oh, you're going to build a big fleet? That's a great idea, but I'm going to do it, and then I'm going to give it to, you know, Khaleesi. And then we're going to be married, and we're going to rule Westeros.
Because she's going to see my penis, and she's going to love it.
Well, yeah.
It's such like a bar, you know, like you're bragging about you're going to bang next.
And Yara, being a female, goes, oh, you're going to seduce her. He goes, no, no, my fleet's going to seduce her. I'm going to have sex with her. I was like, what?
Excuse me while I whip this out.
I'm like, are you for real right now?
It's like,
anyways, so they have this ritual of where they literally drown Euron. He's literally the priest is
he's holding him
under the water.
Damn high priests again.
May the sea salt water take away Euron Greyjoy and replace him with the king. Blah,
blah, I don't want to see what these baptisms look like.
It's pilot, man. So they pull
like tie weights to the baby's feet and drop him in the ocean.
they pull him out of the water, just lay him on the beach. There's no resuscitation, and they just sit there and they wait.
That's my favorite.
It's amazingly funny.
I knew he was going to wake up and cough out. I actually wanted that moment to him.
I know it was going to happen. I would have been so happy had they just gone full Monty Python with it.
Okay. Well, sure, I would love one of them to turn the other one and go,
Is he dead yet?
Either that or just bring out, like, all right, who's the next candidate? Yeah. I'm in the water.
Right by the person we were supposed to kill here. But no, he does. He wakes up.
Come on, who's going to volunteer next?
And we crown King Pacey the First.
And
oh my God! And his first act is, "Where's my niece and nephew?"
They're running for their lives. Wait.
No, this is by far my favorite line. Let's go kill him.
That's pretty funny.
Then you know what? An entire population that elects a man whose entire grounds to run on is murder my family. They deserve the king they get.
I can't wait to see if he's already well known to be more or less a crazy king.
Mm-hmm.
But so anyway, so he after they realize that they've gotten away with half their fleet,
all their best ships.
So they've lost their best sailors, their best ships. He turns to them, to his followers, and says, "Build me 1,000 ships." And I don't know about you guys, but so far, all the islands I've seen have no fucking trees.
I was actually thinking something similar. It's like, how big is the island where you can build 1,000 fucking ships?
So let's recap. We have no sailors.
Go to your huts and build me some trees.
I want a boat.
No sailors, no ships, and we have no fucking trees to build any ships with.
You know what? When I first became king, I built a fleet that sank into the ocean.
But let's make
the iron. I built another fleet. That would also sink into the ocean. And I built another fleet that was burned down and then sank into the ocean. There's your Monty Python moment, is him trying to build these shitty boats out of nothing that exists.
Iron Island is at this point in my head.
The last line just proves that what's his name who wrote this series?
David Benioff and D.B. Weiss.
Yes.
Yeah. Or George Martin.
Are very much on the liberal side because the last line you see him say is, "Make the Ironborn great again." Sound any familiar to our
I actually didn't even sound
like
that.
That sounds like the Republican tricky dick. Yeah.
No. It sounds like Donald Trump. Make America great again.
I was thinking Nixon. I've heard him. Yeah.
So
no, I didn't even pick up on that. To be honest,
I was like, oh my God, they just made Euron Donald Trump.
No, that's kind of funny, but no, I didn't think of it at all.
I was going to say, did you not see that at all until then?
No, I just, that was their crowning moment. They literally crowned that. There's no way you cannot see it.
No. I know that.
There's no
way. I actually didn't. I didn't pick up on that at all.
I actually want to picture a lower class West Virginian Donald Trump now. Someone needs to make this character. That would be hilarious.
No, that would frighten the crap out of me.
I own this county.
All right, so moving on to Jorah, the lovesick fool. So basically, we see it's Khaleesi, Jorah, Daario, and I think that's it.
Yeah.
Daario? Daario, yeah. Hmm. Daario, whatever the hell his name is.
Daario Argento?
The guy that got replaced.
It is Daario.
Yeah.
And she's like, I twice banished you. You came back twice. You saved my life, so I can take it back, and I can't send you away. What the hell do I need to do with you? And basically, he turns to her and goes, "You have to send me away." Mm. And that's when he shows her his grayscales.
He shows her dun dun dun. Yeah.
Yeah. And that he basically tells her that he's gonna.
I'm gonna become the thing.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have some babies now. Let's go to it.
And in dead. And
that's what Khaleesi needs: rock creatures. Yes. Which she hasn't had
yet. She has dragons. Now she has rock children.
And essentially, it's like he says, "Well, I'm just gonna, in typical, I guess you'd call it zombie movie style, that he's gonna kill himself before he turns 100% into whatever the hell they are,
zombies,
rock zombies."
And then she just goes on. She goes on this big speech. She goes, she tells Jorah, "Well, I command you. I command you to go find a cure and heal yourself." Basically just
kind of then right before that he's like, "I always loved you," and she's like, "Oh, that's sweet."
Tyrion was right. "I do love you." And Daario's just standing there going,
"Well, this is awkward."
But I rode the dragon. Yeah. I mean, that sounds awful coming out of me.
Yeah, it does.
And right before she's ready to walk away, actually, as she goes, "You had not been dismissed." "Mm. No. I command you. I command you to go find a cure. Whatever it is in the world, I command you to heal yourself and return to me when I take the Seven Kingdoms. I need you by my side."
And they have that like wonderful, sweeping, almost romantic music in the background.
And again, Dario's standing there going, thumbs kind of going,
"But I slept with her!
Why am I here?"
Yeah.
Let's recap. Stannis' daughter, who he burned at a stake, the fucking bastard. He apparently like searched the entire world looking for this cure. He was only able to stop it. He wasn't able to like reverse it.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Okay.
So I don't know where he's going to find this cure or how he's going to. Well, find
I thought the cure actually came from the Red Woman, didn't it?
I don't know.
No, Stannis'
daughter. No, yeah. But there is now a connection between the Red Woman that Stannis was with and apparently a new one.
So, did anybody else just think that Khaleesi just kind of just threw him back into the friend zone and just said, "Well, if you happen to make it, fine, I'll let you back, but if not, oh well, see you later."
I didn't see that at all. No, there was a lot more.
I definitely saw, like, "Hey, if you get a cure and you come back to me,
please come back to me alive."
Yeah, come back to me, because that was more of like, you know, a woman asking a man, "Please come back." Yeah.
Right, it's like... She had sympathy for him when she realized what it was becoming.
I don't think she felt sympathy. I think she felt love.
Yeah, she did.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, there's no friend zone here. Which, by the way, I hate that phrase. But yeah, it was just there was more of an emotional connection. She finally allowed herself to realize that I don't care anymore. It's like that you betrayed me because you've done such good for me, and you have cared for me, and I realize I do care for you. Mm-hmm. I've gotten the formalities of banishing you twice out of the way. Now you stay alive and come back to me. And whatever may occur, I will find you.
And if you happen to find a cure for your AIDS, I mean herpes, I mean whatever it is you have.
You're stoning.
We might have sex. Maybe. All right. Anyway. Next scene. I actually groaned. It was a good scene, but I groaned. A new Red Woman has appeared.
Wait, why did you groan through this?
Why did you groan? What?
Because I don't like the Red Women sect. They're evil, 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 evil people. Anyway, so...
If you didn't have them, we wouldn't have Jon Snow.
Anyway. I just want to see what happens when she takes her necklace off. Anyway, so...
She's one of the dragons.
Well... Apparently, she's, like, the first, like, of the Red Women. Like, she's the highest, like, in the church. Or at least that's how they announce
her. Is she the highest of her sect?
Yeah, I think so. Because they announce her as, like, being the first servant of the...
saying sect, because I think you keep saying sex, and I'm like...
Sect.
Yeah, she's the highest of her sects, yes. She's the highest of her sect.
So essentially, she might even be older than the other red woman.
Yeah. So they might hang a lot lower.
So she takes it off, she becomes dust.
Poof. No, they're not going to hang lower. They're going to be, like, crinkled.
She was beautiful, though, yeah.
All the red women are, like, yeah. So, or both part of the necklace. All of them died, both of them, I mean.
So the scene actually starts off, though. We find out that Tyrion's pact with the Masters of Astapor seems to be holding up. Nobody's died in 2 weeks. Kind of a temporary ceasefire is holding. Not much else is going on, so at least diplomacy seems to be working for now. And that his big concern is that he wants the whole world to know that it is actually Khaleesi that's responsible and not him.
Yeah.
Because he wants to make sure that that's the...
Yeah, not only responsible for, you know, them being free of slavery, or kind of free of slavery, but also, you know, for their security and safety and all that thing.
Exactly. And to help with that, he announces that he's recruited somebody new. Mm-hmm. Or new blood, I think he even called it.
Friday the 13th, part 7.
So Q... the new red woman.
Well, there was a red man, and then he introduced the red woman.
Okay, yeah. You're right. So, yeah, it was the high priestess of the Red Temple of Volantis. So this is from Volantis.
Yeah.
She's the high priestess of the temple in Volantis, which is one of the cities, I believe, that is at war.
I thought Volantis was the one that was, like, where the rock thing came from.
Valyria.
Okay.
This is definitely one of the cities that are warring, or that are supporting Volantis
is handing them the money.
Money, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, another political move by Tyrion here.
Master of political moves.
Master of politicals. And, of course, her words are, you know, Daenerys... Boy, they're big on this. Daenerys is the one who was promised, she says. Her dragon. Born
of fire.
You're made of fire and fire flesh. Fire made flesh. A gift from the Lord of Light.
Yeah. Blah, 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 fire blah, is blah. Light. Fly into the fire. You'll be fine.
You know. So, you know, and in direct contrast with, obviously, Melisandre saying, well, Jon Snow is now the prince that was promised.
Well,
so,
I mean, I think Varys brings that up, even.
So the Red Women
the
are basically...
time, Tyrion's just like, shut up. So, this is working.
So, obviously, their sect just attaches to whoever's the most popular in power and goes, you're the one that's promised.
Well, I would in this laugh one's defense, that... at least she actually is able to endure, like, she's fireproof, so it fits with the religious theme.
You know, I would laugh if the entire...
Well, we haven't set Jon Snow on fire yet, so we'll see.
I would laugh if the entire Red Sect was actually just a giant prank group that is like the bug zappers of this world.
We just
they have everyone
people.
Come to the fire, and then they just...
And so basically, the devil sets her terms out and turns to Tyrion and says, she'll... send her, or summon her priest, and spread the word that Khaleesi Daenerys has been set to lead the people out of darkness, blah, 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 blah. Ugh. I hate these people. Very, you know...
You don't like any of the religious sects within this, like, Westeros, though.
No, I don't.
Well,
to be fair,
the way they portray all of them is awful. They portray them as awful, awful people that do awful things.
The only one that doesn't seem to be out for anybody is the Three-Eyed Raven. He's the only one so far.
Well, yeah, but that's not really like a religious thing as much as
it is in a way.
He's more of an embodiment of the old ways and what they worship instead of just like actually, well, you know, setting out to have people follow him.
The three-eyed raven is almost like a part of nature. It actually uses nature to go back and forth,
attached to the roots. Yeah, mm-hmm.
Right. So it's more of a naturalistic, kind of the old god versus
so old
Lord
school
of
paganism
Light would be like
Westeros.
The new god. Huh?
So old school paganism of Westeros.
But, why not?
But luckily, Varys is there, and good old Varys, who was mutilated by a member. It turns out the sorcerer that mutilated him was actually a member, it turns out, of this sect. Of this
well, it doesn't actually suggest that, but he did a similar practice.
Yeah. But yeah, he has everything, every reason to doubt her. He says all this stuff is like, there is also a woman that believes Stannis Baratheon was the one who was promised, and now look what happened to him.
That bandit
was defeated by the guy sitting next to me.
Right.
I just love Tyrion throughout this entire scene, just like looking at us like, and just trying to make peace between the two of them.
Yeah.
He's just like, Varys, shut up. I've got this to work. Shut the fuck up.
Varys, shut up.
But he's trying to say as politely as possible. It's great.
Varys, please back off.
But I did like how Varys brought up Stannis. Stannis. He goes,
Varys, you are out of your element.
Varys goes, you know, I remember Melisandre saying something kind of similar about Stannis Baratheon. Why should we trust you? Yeah. Why should we trust her? Look what happened to them.
That had to be probably one of the best banters.
It was. It was. I can't remember the whole like speech.
Me too. It was a huge battle of wits. And it was, let's see who's going to win.
Well, yeah, but she has that great line. It's like, knowledge has made you strong, but you haven't learned everything. And as she's, like, approaching him, she's stepping up the steps, and you just see him, like, freaking out as it keeps progressing.
I don't, it's not so much freaking out as she's telling him his life story.
And she's hitting incredibly close to
home. She's throwing out pieces that we've known, but pieces that we're going, what the hell is she talking about?
Like, oh. Yeah. But at the time she gets to the point, do you want to hear what the voice from the fire said? And she has this, like,
because she says, I can tell you what the voices in the fire said. Do you remember hearing them?
Do you remember what they said?
And it was like,
yeah, he has a incredibly freaked out look on his face.
Because Varys has finally met its match here, in my opinion. I mean, she's evil, but...
Well, was she in the room when all this happened?
I don't know.
Can she decipher
it through the religion?
Or does she see it? I mean, like, the way the Three-Eyed Raven does.
I get goosebumps just thinking about that scene now, because it was so good.
It's just, that's another example of just how well-written it is. And every scene that
the woman's the badass.
every scene that a writer tries to approach when they write a story in a scene, they always have, essentially, two or more characters that when they are having a conversation, they always have a goal at the beginning of the scene, and it's always about who comes out on top, and it's a conflict between everyone. And this one really had, Tyrion at conflict with Varys. Varys at conflict with the new Red Woman. The Red Woman trying to, you know, work her way in. And in the end, she is the one that comes out on top. It's just, watching the power plays in writing is like, so awesome.
Speaking of the writing, like the one line she says that I didn't write down, everyone is what they are and where they are for a reason. Mm-hmm. Terrible things happen for a reason.
Mm. Remember, no matter where you go, there you are.
Hold on. Oh, whoops. Sorry.
Stop eating so much popcorn.
Too much popcorn. And she goes on about being powerful, and that's when she grabs him. She brings up his whole childhood. I mean, just, this woman is, she's going to be something to be.
She's going to be reckoned with.
It's going to be her
versus Varys. She gives him kind of a warning at that point. He's like, you know, as long as you stand beside your queen, you don't have an issue with me. Right. Sort of thing.
Yeah. Right. I'm not your enemy.
Let's see if that proves true. In other words, basically she's threatening him at the same time, saying, push me too far and I'll turn her against you.
Yeah. It's like, as long as you stand with her, we're okay, sort of thing.
So, it's also kind of game on, I think. I think it's going to be Varys versus, what's her name again? I'm going to have to talk. Another name to remember. Kinvara.
Kinvara.
So. Okay, next scene. We're back at Castle Black. It's kind of a liar, pants on fire kind of scene. Basically, Sansa and Jon are having a strategy meeting with Davos, Ed, Breen, and I guess Tormund. Is that his name? Tormund?
Brienne.
Tormund.
Yeah. And they're just kind of going over, they're counting the number of houses that are still loyal to the Starks, and and things aren't looking real optimistic. The Umbers,
we need to fight the 10,000 Uruk-hai that are about to attack.
Right, the Umbers have given Rickon to Ramsay. Robb Stark killed, the Karstark's father, but Sansa kind of being the more stronger Sansa now, she kind of stands up and says, well, others will come. The North remembers.
But she has that fun little dialogue with Davos as well. Yeah, she's
like, they remember the Stark name, and even Davos is kind of like, I doubt it, but Jon does have the Stark name. And then she goes, Davos goes, I doubt it, because Jon doesn't have the Stark name.
Mm.
And then Sansa goes, no, but I do.
Mm. Like,
once again, a woman coming out on top in a conversation.
Well, so very strong.
Well, yeah, but I think that's one of those things where it kind of goes back to that conversation with Littlefinger, where that you kind of see that kind of almost distrust a little bit.
A little bit. Maybe. I mean, she's obviously sorting herself as the leader of this new alliance.
Well,
I mean,
yeah. And then also in that same scene, yes, she goes, no, but I do, you're right. But she also says, and Ramsay's no more Bolton's son than John was my father's. Mm-hmm. He's as much a Stark as Ramsay was a Bolton. That's what she said.
Right, and she goes on to reveal what she learned from Littlefinger earlier in the episode, that the Tullys have taken back River Run, and her great uncle's taken it back. And when John asks her how she knows this, she, instead of saying she met with Littlefinger, she said, "Oh well, I read in a Raven
that came before she left." Before she left.
So why do you think she lied? Let's go. What's your guys' opinions on this? Why do you think she's lying to her brother?
So far, I'm not entirely sure. Maybe slightly distressed. Yeah. Maybe she's trying to set herself up to where she can come out a little farther ahead somewhere down the line if she needs to negotiate with Blackfish or Littlefinger or anything along those lines.
Maybe she didn't want to let out that she met with Littlefinger to get this information. I mean, because John being John would go to attack Littlefinger immediately.
Well, I mean, he hasn't had a lot of interaction with Littlefinger or any I remember, but yeah, it's definitely a character you'd be distrustful of. Yeah.
So you think she's ashamed that she was even associated with him at one point, maybe? Or
I don't know.
No, I think it's more she wants that ace in the hole, almost. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, she wants it kind Keep of in her back pocket.
She wants to see how it's going to play out, to see if it's something she could use for her advantage.
Right. She's playing the game. Yeah. Because if you all remember in last season when he brought Sansa to Winterfell, mm-hmm. he brought her to Lyanna's grave and the grave of all the Starks at Winterfell, and he said, "Wouldn't it be amazing, Wardeness of the North?" Mm. So he basically said, "You can become warden. Ramsay can have an accident. You can become the Wardeness of the North." Mm. You know?
Right.
And I think she never forgot that. And I think that's what she's playing on.
Mm. So she's trying
to... Yeah, I mean, if you go to the conversation where she's saying, "Well, I'm a Stark, they'll follow me," sort of thing, it definitely does kind of add to that theory.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Interesting.
Sorry, I'm pulling stuff from last season.
So. Well, as well you should, because that's what you have to do with this show. So.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we're going back to things from even the first and second season with this episode to an extent.
Oh, man. Yeah, we're definitely going back to season one.
Anyway.
So after a lot of seriousness so far in this episode, we finally get a little bit of humor. Brienne asked her why she lied before that, and Sansa doesn't really answer, I guess.
It cuts away.
Kind of cuts away. And then Brienne's like, "I'm hesitating to leave you," because they're getting ready to split up.
Mm.
And she says, "John seems okay. He seems trustworthy. Maybe a little brooding."
Yeah. That was understandable, though.
Yeah, understandable because of what happened.
But then she goes
on. So that's a little like that's when the series became self-aware.
And then,
a little meta, yeah.
But she goes on, and here's the funny part where she goes, "But, you know, that wildling guy with the beard..."
I still love that interaction because it goes through like a scene so later great. Where he just smiles
he's
at her
smiling
and you see her just like, be like, "Ugh."
Because I think on the one hand, like, I started thinking about that after I saw that. It's like, I wonder, because she had that whole speech about what it was like to go to a wedding or to like this one of these grand events, and then because of her height and her stature,
no one went to dance with her
at all. So I mean, I wonder if she actually doesn't know how to react to something like that.
Yeah,
to
like a guy it weirds her out.
Well, she's not used to it. She's probably been pursued by a guy.
Yeah.
And he's not just pursuing her. He's like, "Yeah,
that's,
baby.
That's everything he wants right there." Is in her.
Like, I don't know. That looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah. In his defense, for a wildling, he's actually being very subtle about this.
He's being incredibly subtle because I think it's the first time he's seen a woman his size.
A little bigger, actually.
Maybe a little bigger, yeah.
And she's carrying a sword and she could kill him. But, you know, moving on from that...
Well, yeah, but I think that's part of the attraction for him.
I mean, you all keep talking about that, but what about when her and Jaime Lannister, you know, had that moment in the bath?
Yeah, Jaime had a moment with her, but, yeah. I mean, it was nothing like this.
No, this is hilarious. By far.
The way the actor that's playing the wild guy...
Oh, my God, I love it. Hilarious.
Yeah. All right. I'd like that's a nice tasty bit of meat.
All right.
Sorry.
When did Sean Connery become part of this thing?
Okay, well, I'll say this, though. The Wildlings have become less the bumpkins of Game of Thrones now that we've kind of gotten into
the Ironborns
one, yeah.
So the romance continues. Hopefully they keep that going for a while.
Oh, my God.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Even if they hook up, I still think it'd be funny.
I think at one point she should just look at him and say, "You know nothing," to kind of keep it up there.
Well, it's a great scene, and before it transitions to the other one, you have that small bit where it's like, "Should we close the gate?" And he's like, "I'm not the Lord Commander," and he's like, "Oh shit, no one else here is in charge. All right, close it."
And actually,
no one's in charge of Castle Black anymore.
And I did get that's true. It's just kind of
it's all default.
Kind of,
They're probably down like half the people. Yeah,
got like one fourth of people.
It was so, moving on from that.
So, but I did get a little out of sequence. She did say, "Well, John will protect me, and Sansa, he will keep me safe. He's my brother." And then, but Brienne, being the smart, she is smart. She's not just a brute. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's pretty damn smart.
No, there's nothing.
Then why did you lie to him?
Yeah, right? I mean, she came out of nobility. Right. She is actually pretty intelligent as far as the show depicts her.
Right.
So it'd be interesting to see where this runs and how they're going to go out and try to rally what houses of the North they can. So should be quite interesting.
Well, we do find out what she was sewing there.
Finally.
Yeah.
In that final scene between, with Sansa, you see she hands her brother, half-brother, a wolf-lined cloak.
Mm-hmm. Had, like, the Stark emblem on it.
That's right, yeah.
Because she's like,
here you go, you're wearing my uniform now.
She's wearing one also, and she says, "Here, I made this for you."
Yeah, cause she's got the dress with the wolf on it.
Right,
and he looks like Robb Stark to me now, when he put that on. That looked a lot like what Robb Stark
was. Well, you know, throughout the whole thing,
go ahead. No, you're fine.
I was going to say, like, instead of looking like Robb Stark, he's kind of getting, like, the Sam Winchester reactions with just the kind of, crunching, brooding face, which one of my friends has described as, like, a fart face, like, when you walk by and smell it.
And for me, I kind of almost distrusted Sansa in the way she handed it to him, like, "Here, I made this for you."
Like it's lined with anthrax.
Well, I kind of feel like there are times I feel like Sansa is using him.
Oh my god, yeah.
But at the same time, she's still her brother, and even if she does rise to power, he'll always be by her side, and she's always going to treat him that way. But
I think she's going to feed him to the wolves. Pardon my throwing this out there, but I'm almost sure she's going to feed him to the wolves.
She's
going to
go real dark, huh?
I don't know if she's going to go that dark. I mean,
I think Littlefinger got to her in last season and said, "You can be Wardeness of the North." I think that's what's kind of building here.
See, I think she's comfortable. She's going to be a leader without being the actual head of the household. Like, she'll run things. She'll be the real leader.
I think she's setting herself up to being, like, the actual leader.
All the women are going to be in charge by the end of the show.
Yeah, boy.
Westeros is,
We'll see. She might go dark. If she goes dark, it'd be interesting.
Because according to the witch, Cersei's going to outlive her children, so...
Because the one that's going to go dark, I always thought was Arya. I would have said...
She's an assassin, so...
She's gone dark, but she's gone badass, is what she's...
Okay, everybody, emotionally gather yourselves. Take a deep breath.
Well, you're
I'm okay, but you guys...
Yeah, but you're leaving out a big part. When everybody leaves the Castle Black, and this—I don't want to. What the hell? Like, what a stable boy walks up to John's friend and goes, "Should we close the gate?" And he goes, "I don't give a fuck. I'm not the Lord Commit." And he freezes. He goes, "Close the gate."
That's true. Yes, I forgot about that. So a little
Castle Black,
a little bit of
someone's in charge somewhere.
It's kind of like these. It's kind of like, "Damn it, Jim! I'm a doctor, not a." I am a doctor.
Yeah.
Moving on. All right. So big ending.
I don't know. I don't know if I could do this one.
Big scene.
I don't know if I can do this.
Let it in. God. Let it out.
Hold on. No. Say it ain't so.
That was awful to watch.
So. Let's just give the short version, and then after I go through it, we'll talk.
The short version.
So we're going to go through the short version of what happens with the visions first, right?
So, basically, Bran notices that everybody's asleep, including the three-eyed raven.
Yeah, he tries to wake him up by throwing a thing.
To see if he's awake.
Yeah.
And tests him out. He's obviously still, well, he's asleep. Everybody's asleep. So Bran goes off on his own on a vision quest of his own. Ends up in the middle of the dead army. Comes face to face with they're calling him the Night King, and now apparently. Yeah. And the Night King basically grabs his arm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He wakes up, and
it's like, you saw me.
The three basically left his mark on him with, like, there's a hand imprint on Bran's arm.
Bran's like, he saw me, the three-eyed ravens.
Did he touch you?
Did he touch you?
I need an adult.
Or he says he will touch you. He's like, well, the three-eyed raven's like, they'll be coming for you. He's like, and Bran's like, well, the cable will protect us like it has in the past. He's like, no.
Not though with his mark on you.
Not with his mark on you.
Yeah. He can get here now.
He knows where you are. Yeah.
So they... I'm trying to catch up. I'm actually abbreviating my own notes here. So basically, the three-eyed raven's like, you have to leave. Time to go. He's like, and the raven turns to him and also says, it's time that you became me.
Yeah.
Bran goes, all right. Am I ready? And the raven goes, no.
No.
Yeah, actually, rewatching that, I almost take that as a very literal statement. Or like, it's time for you to become me. Like, yeah. Especially because how this is depicting time travel in this universe is everything is kind of
being... Is that already him?
Yeah, like, I actually think the three-eyed raven is like Bran from the future. Like, he goes back in the past to, like, more or less teach himself.
Teach him, right.
Because
that's
this,
an interesting theory. Yeah, I thought about that.
Yeah, because essentially this...
I thought that too.
Yeah. Like, this definition of time travel to go with is, like, everything is kind of fated to be what it will be. Like, even if you try to change the past, you're just making it happen. Like, that's the variant of time travel it's going
with. It's subscribing to the 12 Monkeys theory of time
it's
travel
destined.
Instead of the Terminator, where it's
yeah,
like,
it's
yeah,
very
you
much
can't
destined
change
to
that.
Well, see, and I believe that, and I also thought that. And it came right at the end of this episode where I was like, huh.
Yeah,
what
I mean,
if? Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why you see, like, the three-eyed raven keep showing him, like, the pictures of, like, or vision of his father, because he's just as emotionally invested that as the younger Bran is.
And he tells him, don't get involved.
Yeah.
Because he knows.
And there's constant warnings of don't stay too long, because maybe you can get stuck there.
Yeah.
Like, maybe he can travel in the past, but not future.
Right.
Sort of thing.
So. To finish the scene. So,
sorry.
No, it's okay. We went on. I have no problem with that. So, basically, Bran and the Three-Eyed Raven go on a last vision together, so to speak. Mira and Horador start reminiscing about food, eggs, and having fresh eggs, and eating bacon, and whatever.
Well, they've been stuck in a tree for
Hodor.
A few weeks.
And eating moss, apparently.
Hodor.
Yeah, and then she's talking to Hodor, and Hodor's like, Hodor.
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 Oh, yes, food sounds
like,
awesome.
He's
yes.
like, oh, we can finally have Rec-Lim. Hodor.
So so she runs out. She hears something. She runs outside.
No, she didn't hear anything.
I thought there was like a crashing.
No.
No.
She sees her breath, and she sees Hodor's breath, and she freezes.
Because she knows
that everything is icy coming out of their breath.
Oh, because the army's coming. Okay.
The army's right outside the door. It's not that it's coming. It's right outside
the
door.
It's right freaking there.
So she runs outside, and sure enough, there is the Dark King, his generals, and the entire freaking undead army. Basically, they're...
Pants crapping moment.
They're trying to... the children of the tree, children
nature
of nature,
children.
Or whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
They start throwing glowing rocks that kill a few of them, but...
And we see
magic grenades.
And we see the most, like, you know, visceral reenactment of Plants versus Zombies.
Kind of, yeah. So she kills up some. She goes back into the cave.
They make
then you have
ring.
That little fire
they make their
thing.
Own ring of fire.
Yeah.
And
which
then,
is weird because, like, the generals of, like, the zombie army just passed.
They're made of ice, so yeah, they kind of just
like
freeze it as
like,
they're walking
like,
over.
Yeah, like
it
dissipates, and then
right.
when
and
all
then
the,
it comes back through.
Yeah, and all the small zombies
I
have to go around it.
Through a burning ring of fire.
Exactly.
Except it doesn't burn me at all. So Mira's yelling to Bran, "Wake up! Wake up! Wake up! We need to warg Hordor. We need to take control of him. Wake up! Wake up! Wake up!"
So she's yelling loud enough that this world that...
Right,
and
we see Bran and the Three-Eyed Raven back at Winterfell. They're looking at something going on.
Yeah, you have Stark talking to his father, talking about if you're going to fight, win, sort of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Protect your brother.
She starts hearing them, you know, we need Horador, we hear the voice, and even Three-Eyed Raven says, you should probably listen to your friend.
You need to go. You need to leave me.
And he turns to Willis, the younger version, and he takes control of Horador through the vision, which is kind of wild.
Yeah.
Into itself, right? So.
And then, as they're escaping... One of the coolest, like visual moments in this entire scene, when they surround the Three-Eyed Raven, and in the vision, you just see him like just dissipate into
into nothing, dust. Yeah,
yeah. Oh, yeah, but that's
but Mira takes out one of the generals.
Yeah, oh yeah,
she stabs him, and then you see Brand's wolf try to go after the zombie.
God, more direwolf deaths. That's like two in one season.
Awful.
Yeah, it's like the yelping bit of it that makes that really bad.
Oh, that killed me.
It's the yelping that gets anyone. I mean, Jesus.
Yeah, I think there's only one left now.
Yeah, I think Ghost is pretty much...
Ghost and Arya's, which is run away. Like, she had to chase it away, but...
Yeah, I guess he's still alive.
Still out there somewhere. Much like Arya.
Yeah, very true.
Yeah.
So, in the vision, he takes control, and suddenly, during the vision, after the Raven leaves... The Willis goes into convulsions. Like, he looks at...
Well, not yet. You're breaking the sequence of events, because, like, they have to... There's a door that they have to get out, and... The long hallway, like, you know, all those armies chasing after them.
Came up, and they're coming down through the ceiling.
And they're, like, all they're over. Not just the floor, but the walls and the ceiling.
Yeah, like, swarming at, like, insects level.
So not only do you have... his direwolf sacrificed his life for Bran, but then you have the child of nature Leaf sacrifice her life.
Yeah, she goes all suicide bomber on it.
And she
was happy to do it, and she blows a few of them up, kind of slows them down.
She buys them more a little bit of time,
right?
And they finally make it to the door, and you're like, okay, are they going to make it out? Because you see them coming through the fire, and it's like, and
as they're coming out, they have to like brace the door.
Yeah.
And then
Mira off.
Yeah. Mira's dragging Bran away, and she's yelling for Hodor to hold the door. But again, because she's yelling so loudly through Bran, that voice carries over while he's warged through.
And Bran, in the vision, looks at Willis. Willis sees him. And then suddenly goes into convulsions.
Starts
screaming, hold the door.
Like the young version screaming, hold the door.
Hold the door, which eventually becomes...
Hodor.
Like Hodor. His brain melts. And I think the reason...
That was awful.
The reason that moment has such an impact... It's like what you were saying about predestination. It's the fact that everything that we have seen up to this point, I mean, there's no escape, basically. There's no escape from what's written.
Well, what's weird is, though, is, you know, Bran's been manipulating him the whole time.
Yeah, and he didn't...
And yet he's the one that actually gets him killed.
I don't feel it's manipulation. I feel
Hodor, no, I mean, it's...
I feel like Hodor loves him.
Yeah.
It's like the double dash carts in Mario Kart. Like, when you both coexist in the same...
I feel like Hodor loves Bran and would do anything to protect him, and he has in the past, and he's been Bran's caretaker. Because he's been carrying Bran this entire time. Because Bran has no legs to walk, as we know.
Right.
But I don't feel it's manipulation, I feel it's sacrifice. And I feel that as the direwolf and the child of nature, I feel like Hodor, this was his sacrifice.
Hodor,
is kind of unintentionally manipulated. Like, he is kind of changed through the process. Like, he could speak before. He had a life before. One of the most depressing things is he more or less lost his entire adult life to this.
That moment, yeah.
Yeah.
And hats off to the writers. If this was their plan the whole time, writing that in and going through six seasons, basically, of Hodor, essentially, I mean...
That's set up from the beginning.
That's where I gave it that much credit, is because from season one, they knew the history of this character. They knew what made his mind like that, and while you're connected to Hodor, because you see him, like you said, carry Bran this whole time, because, something in his past says... you know, I have a connection to him. I want to protect him because he knows.
Well, he's Bran. He's a Stark, and he's been Hodor has been part of the Starks since Ned was a child.
Yeah, but I think just to see that, I hate to say it, this is why I think it gets to me as much as it does, because for as long as Hodor has carried him and protected him and allowed Bran to warg into him and still be there the whole time and to do the final moment. That's the living embodiment of the Giving Tree, man. I mean, for you to not get emotional with that, I mean, that's, wow, if you don't get emotional with the Giving Tree.
Yeah, I mean, he sacrifices himself for Bran to get away.
Yeah.
And Bran's more or less the reason he hasn't been able to talk. And
right.
Yeah, I mean just, that's just, it's this whole weird predestination thing on top of it, and just...
But if you think about it, Mir's the one that told... Bran had nothing to do with Hodor holding the door.
Right.
Bran's the one that said... Mir's the one that sat there Mir's and the yelled one. Back at him,
yeah.
Hold the door.
Well, right. Yeah, but it's definitely his abilities that transmits that message. Like, in some unconscious way, he definitely was the carrier of it.
It's a default. It's the fact... I mean, I don't think he did anything intentionally. It's the fact that their connection that existed and Mir's voice came through. I mean, all of it was accidental. It was just an accident.
So, real quick. Is this more heartbreaking than seeing Ned Stark
decapitated? Yes. Easily.
Yeah. You have more emotional build-up for this. Like, this is 6 seasons of enjoying that character and kind of starting to like him.
And to have him ripped out of your life like that was...
And once again, like, it's not just Ned, that he died. It's just that his entire adult life was modified for this moment. Like, it all built up to this.
Right, exactly.
Was it more emotionally tearing than when we saw Jon Snow get killed last season?
Okay, I'm going to say this. This was more emotionally tearing than any death on Lost. This was more... this is up there with the emotional scarring of that Futurama episode of Jurassic Bark.
Boys.
All right, close, but not quite.
Oh, no, I mean, it's up there.
Has anybody given thought to... And I just did this right now, and I went, oh, crap. So, Hodor's being killed by the dead army.
Oh, crap, yeah.
Hodor, isn't he going to come back to life?
He's going to be a zombie Hodor, yes.
He'll be back. He'll come back as Kilbran. Kill Bran.
Or Mira, you know.
Or just kill
Bran. But I just, Bran. You know, going through all this,
at least
like,
with the zombies, they don't seem mentally there as much as just flesh walking.
Right.
So. Still, that's an awful lot of power, walking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's like having a giant taken down and then being reanimated as a zombie.
Well, and
Jon Snow and Daenerys are finally like, we have an army. The White Walkers are like, we have a Hodor.
Yes, but I have a giant. Yes, but we have Hodor.
We got dragons.
So, yeah, and I'm sorry, I was like, oh, wait.
Yeah we might see a zombie Hodor in a few episodes.
I'll be honest, that would be as scarring as watching Robb Stark being marched out with the head of his dire wolf on him.
Mm-hmm. So, all right. Anything else about Hodor?
You're so wrong.
I am cold and heartless.
Yeah.
God, I needed a few minutes after that episode just to kind of like regather myself. I mean,
they couldn't do it to you again.
They never did it to me this bad. Like, they never broke
I
me
never
down this
spoiled
much.
Any of this for my husband.
Yeah, it was your fucking Facebook post there, Brink.
Hey,
I said I
all
would.
All I texted him after I watched it was, it was a very emotional show.
One. Yeah.
Besides, all I did was put on a...
You put that picture of the door...
Doorstop with Hodor on it.
Yeah, that's...
That doesn't mean anything.
Except to a person that's been trained to read symbols.
Hold listen here, you big baby. Stop it. Okay?
But no, seriously, like, even seeing that, it just... Yeah, I wasn't prepared for, like, the emotional impact that had, because...
No.
Yeah, that 6 seasons. It wasn't just like watching any other show where they just kill somebody off and there was no build up to it. This was built up from
episode 1. Let me rip your heart out and crush it in front of you.
Right. I mean, it's
because he's such an endearing character. I mean, he's an innocent. You never even thought. You know what? You're like,
he's
really?
He's truly the only innocent that the show had.
Yeah.
He really is, and that's the other thing that's even more heartbreaking. Is
the death of innocence.
Yeah. That it was literally the death of the only death of innocence the show ever had.
And honestly, he really was. Even going back to Aaron's, you know, thing of his entire adult life was screwed.
Yeah.
From that point on, when
except maybe Stannis' daughter,
when Willis heard hold the door,
mm-hmm.
everything just changed for him, and it wasn't his fault.
So do you think he knew? Do you think he saw the end?
I think he knew it was probably coming. Yeah. That's the other thing time. I think too. Like he didn't care. He just knew he had to
protect Bran
the whole time. That's again and again even more nobility in Willis Hodor or however you want to see him. Yeah, it's just that amount of that level of sacrifice and the depth of it is beyond words. I mean,
what you talking about, Willis?
It's all just
right. Too soon.
All right, let's just go. We've covered it. We've done it. We got through it. So let's just go right to final thoughts and grades. I'll give you the first.
Another solid A. This is probably one of the most emotionally impactful episodes of Game of Thrones, and probably one of the biggest deaths. At least in terms of, you know, emotional impact, and it had the most build up for it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
This is a great season in terms of seeing, you know, just Tyrion continue on and trying to rebuild that kingdom, and just there wasn't a bad scene in this. Like the slowest scene the whole episode was Khaleesi and, you know, and
Jorah,
the
love triangle.
Yeah, like that was the slowest kind of most boring scene in the entire one, and even that's an okay scene.
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
Yeah, I mean, when your slowest scene is involving Khaleesi,
yeah,
you got something good going for you.
Yeah, pretty much.
And even like, then, it's not even a negative scene. It's just
That is the slowest scene compared to the rest of the show, which was just non-stop, you know, things are kind of just fascinating.
Watching stuff progress. And another thing, too, is, like, you don't even really have any action until, like, the last 5 minutes, either. Yeah. Like, there's no fights, there's no battles, there's no
murders. I was actually going to bring that up, and I'll just go right to my final thought. I give it a solid A, definitely an A+. I mean, come on, it cost us Hodor. I mean, why not? I've been joking about it, and it's how I deal with my heartbreak and my own emotion. But I thought it was a great episode. Not a lot of action, some really great dialogue, some really great scenes. Even as much as I hate her, I even love the idea of a new red woman coming into the whole thing between her and Varys. Awesome.
Well, who knows? Maybe they'll have the red woman take on the High Sparrow at one point.
Maybe. Hey, let's get ready to humble.
I want to see the three-eyed raven go up against, or Bran is the new three-eyed raven go up against the Sparrow.
Kill them all. But yeah, I mean, and we also got a little history. We got to find out where the White Walkers came from. So, you know, pretty damn good stuff. So, yeah, great episode. Another reason why I tune in every week, and the reason why I do this podcast. So, Steph?
I give it an A-.
The negative points?
I very much enjoyed the show. I very much felt it was a pull at heartstrings and very emotional show. Yes, that's why I give it the A. The minus part is, how do you come off with that scene with Khaleesi and the love triangle is what I call it, after having her badassness come out and
in the last episode,
burn the leaders of the Dothraki, only to show her be like pining or like watching her friend leave and be like, no, come back to me.
You can't be a badass with a heart.
And and then she almost seems scared to roll out with the Dothraki army.
Really? I didn't get that at all.
She's staring down at this army and she's, I guess, looking at what she did and going, okay.
Well, when you have that many horsemen at your disposal,
I was like, that's how you follow that up?
Time for quick time harsh.
Okay.
No.
I'm A-. There you go.
All right, Johnny.
You know, I think the last time I felt this level of emotion after a Game of Thrones episode. Level of, like, deep, I need a moment was the Red Wedding.
Oh,
coming straight off of that. Because, I mean, that was the moment I turned the TV off and just went,
We sat there. We were just like,
looking at each other. We couldn't say anything.
For probably a half an hour. I remember that, yeah.
Yeah. But I just, I mean, this, the episode's an A for me because, dear God, I mean, we're having theoretical physicists talk about the time travel of Game of Thrones now and how it's on par. I mean, this is like, I can say from personal experience, time travel is a very, 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 very tricky thing to write. I mean, you have to get everything correct. You have to know every little detail. It is the most precise kind of writing anyone can take on, and the fact that we're throwing in time travel in this season and we're giving it this deep of an emotional connection.
Time is weird.
Time is predetermined. I mean, we go back and evidence exists. I mean, there's no multiverse theory of Game of Thrones. There is only one universe. So, I mean, you've got an intellectual side that proves just how smart it is. You've got wonderful scenes with great dialogue again. You've got pretty awesome, like, you know, Night King evil villain stuff to make you just, like, you know. And then, that death of Hodor. I'm saying it right now. This is a death scene that needs to be studied. Just for how well it was done, how much they built up to it, how much they've invested into it, how they gave you all this connection so that the theme could come out that there's your everything in this world is predestined. Okay. So, I mean, yeah, it's, again, this is why Game of Thrones has the reputation it has. It's not just because, you know, it's got a great budget and everything looks cool.
This is why Game of Thrones has a good chunk of our world by the balls, and it's just like,
because
we're gonna play with them.
It's a show for anybody who,
and not in a nice way.
Yeah, it rewards anybody who wants to put this level of investment into it. It's just perfect.
I mean, they have people, they have subscribers coming back week after week after week, season after season.
I mean,
after season.
I mean, come on, it's
and you don't move off your couch for that hour.
People keep.
You subscribe for the show.
Yes. People keep HBO for an entire year just for 10 weeks.
Yeah.
For 10 weeks.
10 hours.
Yeah, for 10 hours, basically.
That's it. Yeah.
You know, everything else is just, you know, oh, hey, we happen to have HBO at the time. Hey, what else is on?
I mean, me and you, honey, we keep talking about, oh, we need to
like save on cable or whatever.
Get
and then we get to HBO, we're like,
and we're
nope.
Like, well, that means we have to get rid of HBO.
No.
Right. Okay. Well, since we're going over 120 minutes now, I'll just get right to it. I kind of figured. I knew it was going to happen. All right. So, where can you find Four Midwest Guys? You can find us on iTunes. You can find us on Stitcher. You can find us on just about OneCast. You can find us just about any app out,
social media.
Any app out there for podcasting. We're on. If we're not, let me know. I'll make sure we can put on it. Everything else, our Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, just go to Google, type in the number 4 Midwest Guys, everything's there. Please reach out to us. We want to hear from you from Twitter or Facebook, even email. Our email address you can find, which is just 4midwestguys@gmail.com. Drop us a line. Send us your questions, your theories, your comments. I would love to do a question and answer session on this show. It would be flipping fantastic.
It would be long, but yes.
Hey, I'll go 2 hours. Yeah. I don't care.
We already did.
Yeah. Thank you all for tuning into a 2-hour show about a 1-hour show.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure we can find other tangents.
Oh, yeah. Good. Now that they've thrown in time travel, of course.
Anyway, moving on.
One of the few shows that's done it well, actually.
Yeah. Lost. Actually, it's just an hour and 22 minutes, I should say. I should set it at 120 minutes, but sorry.
We're still going.
22. So, anyway. Right. With that in mind, so.
That burst in my bubble.
There you go. All right. So, from the 120 round table here. Stephanie, thanks for joining us.
As always, thank you.
Johnny Z.
He'll be okay.
I need a minute. He'll be back with Tyrion next week.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
He'll be okay.
And my brother Aaron.
No problem.
And myself, B. Willie, saying,
keep your guard up and love no one. Be a cold-hearted bastard and you'll be fine.
Hodor!
You watch the show.
Hodor! Yeah. Damn you, woman.
Hodor! Hodor!
Hold the door!
Oh, fuck off!
Oh, fuck you.